The MMA on the Rocks podcast is intended for adult audiences. If you are not an adult, please do not let your parents know you're listening to this, and don't repeat anything you hear on this show in front of them. Also a reminder that even if you fight recklessly, please drink responsibly. Now that we have all that covered, let's start the show. Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Joe Love, and you are listening to episode 315 of the podcast, unless you're joining live, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. If you want to catch the show live, and of course I do encourage you to, make sure you're subscribed on one or all of those platforms. Turn on your notifications so you know when the show is live, like right now. Today is Monday, May 22nd, and we're coming off of a hell of a weekend of MMA. Much better card than I think a lot of people anticipated on paper. I can say that's true for myself anyway. UFC Vegas 73, I believe it was. Before we get into that, just a couple updates for you guys. So you may or may not have heard the show last week. And I announced I was going dry. I was going to try and do from Mother's Day to Father's Day. I thought that was a pretty good window of time, like a little over 4 weeks, I think it would be, is what it would work out to. I already failed, guys. I fell off the wagon already. So Saturday night, I made like a really nice, it's called a picanha steak. It's like a top sirloin with like a fat cap on it. Typical to what you would find in like Brazilian steakhouses. They usually serve them on skewers. So I grilled one of those for the first time. It came out awesome. Really good. It definitely won't be the last time I make one. Just did it on the grill, seared it on both sides, got a nice crust on the fat cap, and then moved it, to indirect heat on the grill. Until it hit like a nice medium rare, which is where I like it. Everybody loved it. Kiddo even loved it. My daughter said it was the best steak she's ever had and kept asking for more. Wife loved it, which of course is very important. It's not as important if I love it, you know. Got to feed the fam, got to keep the fam happy. If they're not happy, I'm not happy. So we're a few bites in. We're all watching a movie together on Saturday. I can't even recall what movie it was. Some kind of Disney movie, I'm sure. And the wife goes, man, this steak would go awesome with a bottle of wine. And it was like, before she finished her sentence, I was popping a cork on a on a nice red wine. It was a Greek wine, I believe. So Brazilian steak, Greek wine, and man, chef's kiss. It just went perfect. It paired so well together. It all just kind of melted in your mouth. You know, the wine was just dancing happily, married to the picanha. It was a beautiful thing. I have no regrets, but you know, I'm the type of guy, like, since I broke the seal, since I went off the rails, you know, then Sunday became a few tequilas at the pool. So, you know, here we are. I have no regrets. Maybe lacked a little willpower, lacked a little discipline. It's not the worst thing I've ever done in my life. Sorry if any of you feel like I let you down, but, you know, c'est la vie, such is life. So here we are. I want to share with you guys. I normally don't do things like this, but I feel the need to share this. I just posted this on Twitter as well. I was kind of perusing through Facebook, which I rarely do. I have a couple of family members who are only on Facebook that I like to catch up with. And usually I give Facebook like a good 4 or 5 scrolls before I get sick of people. So in the middle of that, so let's say scroll 3 or 4, an advertisement pops up for Groupon. Now, I hadn't used Groupon in years, but I happened to download the app a few months ago because there was a local winery that the wife and I wanted to check out. I may have mentioned it on this podcast when we went. Really good place, Aspirations Winery here in Clearwater. They make European-style wine. So they import all the grapes from Europe, and they make all the wine on site. Awesome. Great place. So they had a Groupon for a wine tasting, so I re-downloaded the app and used it, and then, you know, decided to check in. I used to use Groupon a bunch, like back in the day when it first came out. So every now and then I cracked it open, see if there was anything going on. You know, always looking for new things to do with the kiddo to keep her entertained, especially now we let our Disney passes run out. We need some stuff to do. So get an advertisement for Groupon. I'm going to share it with you guys. The audio only audience is going to have a bit of a harder time with this. I'm going to make it large here for you guys on YouTube and Facebook. So I should have said this before I pulled the picture up, but not suitable for work photograph here, I would say. Adult content. I already have the disclaimer at the beginning of the show, but I just need to make extra sure you're not watching this on YouTube, you know, at your office and your boss walks by. So for the audio only audience, which is like 99.7 of you, the Groupon reads as follows: round up your fam, the crew, or your ride or dies, and get ready to explore the fun near you. Shop deals on events, beauty, and more. And the first little image here, the clickable image, is clearly the pubic region of a female. The top image is pre-Brazilian wax, and I guess the bottom image is post Brazilian wax. And in the pre-Brazilian wax photo, there's a hand with like a nitrile or latex glove on that's, I guess, covering the genitals, so you can only see the hair. And it's an advertisement for a Brazilian wax. Now, I'm not bemoaning the fact that Groupon is pushing through advertisements for Brazilian waxes. Like, I'm sure it's a great deal. It's probably a great establishment. Maybe it's a family-owned business. That's great. My issue is with the text in the advertisement where it says, round up your fam. Now, I'm assuming that this is just an honest mistake. Like, some poor intern, like, put the wrong ad with the wrong copy. And that Groupon is not suggesting you should take your family out for an outing to all get Brazilian waxes together. But just the absurdity of that thought alone made me feel inclined to share this with you all. So if you are an audio only listener, please do subscribe on YouTube. And if you want to look at the image I'm talking about and see if you think it's as funny as I do, please subscribe on YouTube and check it out. Also, give me a thumbs up on this video and leave some comments. That always helps. I always forget to ask people to do that sort of thing. But yeah, so I just thought that was funny and I would share it with you guys. I guess, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, like maybe this is a thing where families go out and go wax together. And I've been doing it wrong all this time. Mark, you didn't tune into the wrong channel. This is still MMA on the Rocks. Just talking about, you know, getting Brazilian waxes with your family. Apparently it's a thing. I've been doing it wrong, taking my family to Disney World and doing other things with them. This past weekend, we took a ride up to Homosassa, which is where there are some natural springs, and there's a little wildlife park there that we like to go to, Homosassa Wildlife Park. What's nice about that park is that it's all local animals, and usually they're in there because they can't be released into the wild anymore. They have some type of injury. So it's not like a zoo where they're being held captive. It's a wildlife preserve where they're being taken care of. And they actually have the difference between a wildlife preserve and a zoo is that, you know, they're preserving all the local wildlife, but they actually do have a hippopotamus in the preserve. His name is Lou, short for Lucifer, and he's the oldest hippopotamus in captivity, 63 years of age. And he's been there for quite a while. And the reason that they can have the hippopotamus in captivity there and still not be considered a zoo is because they acquired him like many years ago. He was born in captivity in San Diego or something like that. And somehow this wildlife preserve acquired him. But since they're not a zoo, they're technically not supposed to have a non-indigenous animal. So what they had to do was make Lou an official citizen of Homosassa. So he's an actual resident there, which is why he qualifies to be in the wildlife preserve, and they don't have to be classified as a zoo. So this hippopotamus, 63 years old, oldest one in captivity, I think one of the oldest hippopotamuses alive, hippopotami, I'm not sure of the plural there, hippopotamuses, I don't know, let me know, I'm curious to know, but actually a citizen of Homosassa, Florida, so that's why he is allowed to have residence there. So this hippopotamus has been identifying, I guess, as a human resident for the last 50 years or so, like way before it was trendy to identify as something other than what you were born as. You know, I think this hippopotamus has been a pioneer for a lot of us in a lot of ways. In any case, those are the kind of things I guess I've been wasting time taking my family to go do. We're not going to get Brazilian waxes together. But speaking of Brazilian, you know, since I was talking about Brazilian steaks earlier and now Brazilian waxes, let's talk about the not Brazilian born, but the Brazilian identifying Mackenzie Dern, who was absolutely ferocious over the weekend. Look, if you guys missed this card because you thought it was weak on paper, I get it. You know, it was, you know, on paper, this was a skippable card. I'll be honest with you guys. Like, if I had like anything else that I was potentially going to do, I may have even considered skipping this one. Like, if there was going to be one to skip, I'm glad I didn't, because this card was phenomenal. This fight was phenomenal. Mackenzie Dern came out like a woman on fire and took it right to Angela Hill. Now, the way I thought this was going to go was that Angela Hill would get the better of the exchanges on the feet. And over five rounds, Mackenzie Dern has incredible cardio. She would eventually get the fight to the ground and either control the fight there or find a way to submit Angela Hill late in the fight. I did not anticipate it going this way. Mackenzie Dern was controlling almost all of the striking exchanges. The only time she had a little bit of trouble was in the clinch, because Angela Hill has such an excellent clinch. But that was actually a good thing, because she was controlling the striking so much that Angela Hill wanted to engage in the clinch, and that actually helped Mackenzie Dern in the long run, because she was able to get the fight to the ground a few times and control Angela Hill there. Had her in some really close submissions, but they were kind of right at the end of the rounds. I think there were two 10-8 rounds for Mackenzie Dern in this fight. You could argue there were three. I think Angela Hill possibly won the second round. But other than that, this was the Mackenzie Dern show. She looked phenomenal. It's the best she's ever looked. She was so aggressive on the feet and so tenacious. Still, you know, some of the same issues with her striking, but it was actually playing to her advantage because it was stifling Angela Hill, who's a real technician on the feet. And they always say you have to brawl a boxer, box a brawler, so on and so forth. So that's kind of what Mackenzie was doing. I wouldn't say she was brawling, but she was definitely overextending on her strikes a lot. But it was frustrating Angela Hill, and she caught her clean with a lot of shots, including a flush knee. I think it was in the fourth round that put Angela Hill down. I don't know how she didn't get finished there. Credit to Angela Hill, because she took a beating and a half in this fight and did not get finished. She was in some real tight submissions, were the world-class grappler. She had many opportunities to just roll over and give up, and she didn't take them. You know, there were a couple of opportunities she could have just let Mackenzie take her arm and get a quick tap and live to fight another day, and she didn't. She was also taking a beating on the ground with some big elbows, nasty ground and pound from Mackenzie Dern. The pace she was fighting for 25 minutes was really impressive, I have to say. So super impressed with Mackenzie Dern. It was the best she's ever looked by far. Outstruck the striker and then was completely dominant on the ground. Like, wouldn't give Angela Hill even an inch to breathe. Came really close in submitting her a few times, but just big time control. I do believe one of the judges gave her 3-10-8 rounds in this fight. But at the same time, you know, nothing was going Angela Hill's way, but you have to admire her toughness. You know, because lesser fighters definitely would have quit multiple times. And she never did. She took it the distance. I feel like a lot of people may look at Angela Hill's record, which is nearly 500 record, 15-13, and think, you know, oh, well, she wasn't that good. But, you know, you got to remember, she's taken a lot of fights on really short notice. She's had a lot of close decisions that didn't go her way. A lot of questionable decisions in there as well. She's a fighter that I wouldn't necessarily judge by her record. I would judge her by her willingness to fight, her toughness, and her skills. She's a very skilled fighter, but Mackenzie Dern was the better fighter by leaps and bounds on Saturday night. If you guys didn't catch this fight, I recommend going back and watching it. It was really good. And there were a few other good fights on here as well. The co-main event, Anthony Hernandez gets a TKO over Edmund Shahbazyan in the beginning of the third round. Shahbazyan was actually looking really good in the first round. I think he won the first round. He was landing the cleaner strikes. It looked like he was kind of bouncing back. But then Anthony Hernandez in the second round just started putting a pace on Shahbazyan, and Shahbazyan tried to keep up with him. He tried to match Fluffy Hernandez's pace. And that's just not something that's advisable as a game plan. He gassed himself out. And what I see from Shahbazyan, and I always hesitate giving this kind of criticism, but just an observation from someone who has trained a long time and been around the sport a long time, I see someone who's probably not being pushed in the gym. Now, when I say that, I'm not saying I don't think he's training hard. I'm sure he's training really hard. But I don't know if he's constantly being broken and being forced to drill certain techniques when he's exhausted. Because when he gets tired or gasses out in there, he just kind of... He just kind of shells up. So to me, that's a reflection of not being pushed past his limits in the gym. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe he is doing all those things in the gym and it's just not reflecting on fight night, but that's kind of what I'm seeing from him. And Anthony Hernandez, man, just another fighter who's just so tenacious. Talk about weaponizing pace. They asked him in the post-fight press conference, like, what do you do to have such great cardio? And he said he jerks off with a snorkel on. So if anybody's looking to improve your cardio, I guess you could take the Fluffy Hernandez approach. You get yourself a snorkel at Five Below, pretty cheap. So that's that. Lupita Godinez, this was a catchweight fight over Emily Ducati. Ducati just couldn't get an offense going, really. She was kind of chasing Godinez down the whole fight and just getting countered and picked apart. And that was the story of that one. Joaquin Buckley and Andre Fialho. This was a good fight while it lasted. The problem with Fialho is, you know, he's going to box. So you're really just preparing for one dimension, even though stories of him in the gym is he's got good wrestling. He's got great kicks, but he tends to not use them. His downfall in this fight was getting fouled, I think, twice. Once was an eye poke and the other was a low blow maybe. And he wanted to continue right away because he didn't want to give Buckley a chance to recover. But I don't know, man, if you get poked in the eye and like you need that time to recover, you can't always look at it as your opponent's getting an advantage. You could be putting yourself at a disadvantage by getting back in there too quickly before you can, you know, kind of shake the sting out of your eyes. So that's kind of what we saw there. And then Buckley lands a nice head kick. You know, Fialho was dropping his right hand and Buckley took advantage of it, landed a nice head kick. He was out. And then I don't know who was really to blame for this, but the referee, Kerry Hatley, I guess stepped in. I don't know if he verbally called off the fight, but he was in between the fighters and Fialho was on the ground and Buckley kind of reached over him to land one more hammer fist. And the referee shoved him back and said, I said, stop. So I don't know if it was, but I didn't see him wave off the fight, but he was definitely in there with his hands on both fighters, which kind of signifies that the fight is over, but he didn't actually wave the fight off. And then he got mad at Buckley for throwing that extra strike. But I think it was a misunderstanding. But at the same time, it did seem like it could have been a cheap shot. I want to give Buckley the benefit of the doubt and say that he was just in the moment. He didn't see the ref, you know, wave his hand to signify the fight was over. And that's why he threw that extra shot. And he wasn't just trying to get one more in on Fialho. I don't know if there was some bad blood between these two or what. But impressive win for Joaquin Buckley, who comes back down to welterweight. He really is one of those guys who would benefit from a weight class like a 175. You know, if they were to break things down that way, which, you know, we're beating a dead horse with that one. Michael Johnson, Diego Ferreira with a nasty knockout in the second round. Some people were saying this fight was close. I didn't think it was close at all. I thought Michael Johnson controlled the entire first round. He was working his jab really well. He was standing kind of strangely, standing straight up, which shows that he was not concerned with any takedown attempts from Ferreira at all. And I think there were a couple in there, and Johnson was able to shake him off pretty easily. But I thought Johnson was controlling this fight. Ferreira did a great job listening to his corner. He kept circling away from that power left hand of Michael Johnson. and keeping his foot on the outside, and then was able to throw a beautiful counter, like an overhand right. It was almost identical to the punch that Josh Emmett knocked out Michael Johnson with. Somebody on Twitter had even posted like a side-by-side of the two punches, and they were pretty much identical. This was one of those things where Michael Johnson went down and was stiff as a board. It was a really scary knockout. One that I would hope he's going to take a long time to recover after, because he stiffened up, his toes were curled. Luckily, his back and neck had gotten so stiff that the back of his head didn't hit the ground. That would have made it even worse. But yeah, just one of those scary bad knockouts in a fight that I felt like he was running away with. And Fedeja, you know, just has that power. He connected. He was listening exactly what his coaches told him to do. And that opened up that opportunity for that overhand right, and he was able to put Michael Johnson away. Crazy knockout. Definitely recommend going back and watching this one if you guys didn't watch this card. Okay, Vyacheslav Borisov against Mahashate. This fight was very competitive. I think Mahashate was possibly even winning the first round. And then Borisov, what do they call him? Slavic Claws? Comes back with a knockout in the second round. Kind of similar story to the Michael Johnson fight. And puts Mahashate down. Goes on to do some like crazy Russian dances. It was pretty fun to watch. Karolina Kowalkiewicz outclasses Vanessa Demopoulos, 30-27. This was a catch weight. I'm not sure who missed weight here. This was just experience, was the story of this fight. Kowalkiewicz, clearly the much more experienced fighter. You know, it showed. She had a rough go of it. You know, she had a stretch with like four or five losses in a row, but now she's bounced back and she's looked pretty good lately. So still getting in there and doing the thing. 37 years old. Yeah. Five losses in a row she had. But now she's on a 3-fight win streak. So back on the incline for Karolina Kowalkiewicz. I'm just going to run through the rest of this. Gilbert Urbina with a nice front kick knockout of Orion Koski. Rodrigo Nascimento, split decision win over Alir Latifi. I actually didn't catch that fight. Chase Hooper, unanimous decision over Nick Fiore. Natalia Silva, TKO over Victoria Leonardo. I think I missed that one as well. I think I tuned in right after that one. And then Themba Gorimbo with a unanimous decision over Takashi Sato. Great card. I love this card, especially the main card. So if you guys missed it, I highly recommend watching at least a couple of fights on here. And then it looks like no UFC next week. I don't want to talk out of school too much here. There's some kind of road to the UFC that's going to be on. And then the next card is going to be June 3rd. So in 2 weeks. And that's going to be Kai Kara France against Amir Albazi, which is going to be an awesome fight. But we'll wait until next week to break this card down. I guess they have the week off for Memorial Day. So that would be my guess. I'll get an episode to you guys at some point next week, and we'll go over this card, which actually looks pretty good on paper. A lot of fun fights on this one coming up June 3rd. Before I continue to some other news things, I want to take a look at the rankings real quick and see what's next for Mackenzie Dern. She did call out Rose Namajunas, which I thought was a great call out. Let me just share this with you guys so you can see what I'm looking at here. Looking at the rankings. So here we go. Strawweight rankings. And Mackenzie Dern was ranked number 8 going into this fight with Angela Hill. I don't know if that win is going to bump her up a slot or not. If it does, it would put her right above Marina Rodriguez. I thought Rose Namajunas was a great call out. You know, she has a loss to Xiaonan Yan, who is probably going to fight for the title. So Rose is ranked number 2 behind Carla Esparza. So it was a great call out. And the way she did it, she was like, I don't know if Rose is going to fight again or not, but if she is, I want to fight her. So, you know, it was a good move, I thought. And normally, you know, the number 8 person calling out the number 2 person would be kind of weird, but with a dominant win in a main event, I think it's totally appropriate. And I think it's an awesome fight. I would love to see that fight. I don't think Rose would let Mackenzie get away with as many things on the feet. I think she would punish her a lot more for that. And, you know, Rose is slick on the ground, but Mackenzie Dern, you know, there's levels to grappling. Mackenzie Dern is just levels above everyone else. I would love to see these two grapple and have an MMA fight. Outside of that, a fight with Virna Jandiroba would be fun as well. Another great grappler. But just the improvements from Mackenzie Dern on the feet have just been outstanding. In the amount of time that she's been in the UFC, it's night and day. And, you know, we're going to see. Mark is asking about the announcement of UFC Sydney and says, I'll have to join Down Under in September. I actually did not hear this announcement, but that's awesome. I'm going to talk about some upcoming fights in a second, actually, which is unusual for me. Not something I do a whole lot of. I'm going to talk some news, too. We're doing all kinds of wacky stuff here. Pay no attention to the contents of the glass. Okay, so I want to talk about Francis Ngannou. Now, I'm sure everyone tuning into this listens to a bunch of MMA shows, and everybody's been talking about Francis Ngannou signing with the PFL. The deal to me is very bizarre. And just in case you've been living under a rock and you haven't heard anything about this, the former UFC heavyweight champ, Francis Ngannou, who vacated his title to leave the organization because they couldn't see eye to eye on a deal, was all over the place the past few months. It seemed like he was going to box Tyson Fury and under some kind of weird rules, and then that fell apart, and then he was going to box Deontay Wilder, and then that didn't come together. And then, you know, a few other organizations came out and said this guy's too hard to deal with. And then just when we thought it was just going to kind of fade away, it gets announced that he signs with the PFL. So here's the details. He signed for either a 2 or 3 fight deal that's been kind of vague. He's going to get a guaranteed 7-figure purse for each fight. He will also get a split of the event's net profits. He'll get a signing bonus or a salary to serve as a brand ambassador for the PFL. Whatever that means. I don't know if they're going to send him on a press tour. I'm not sure what that exactly means. If he's going to promote on his social media, if he's going to be a spokesperson, I don't know. He's going to get to have his own sponsors in the cage. He has a non-exclusive contract when it comes to boxing. So he can't compete in MMA anywhere else, but he can go box if he wants to, which is one of the main things that he wanted with the UFC that they didn't want to give him. So it seems like he's getting everything he wants. No champions clause or other extensions. So if he does his two fights and he's the champ, he can just pack up and leave. And then he also requires a minimum salary. I've heard it put at $1 million. I've also heard it said it's $2 million for his next opponent. All right. There's a lot going on here. There's a whole lot to unpack. It seems like Francis Ngannou got everything he wanted. If I'm the PFL, I feel like I'm just flushing money down the toilet here. And this is no disrespect to Francis. You know, he's a phenomenal fighter. I think he has an incredible backstory. You know, the guy came from nothing. He was digging ditches like not even 10 years ago. And then, you know, became champion of the UFC. Real kind of Cinderella story. Like, he's a real-life Cinderella man. But if I'm the PFL and I have all this money to throw around, which I don't know where they have all this money. They must be getting some crazy investors from overseas. There's even rumors that they're planning to buy out Bellator, which is weird because, you know, it's a smaller organization that's going to buy out a larger organization. Okay, so they're making this investment, and I just don't see how they're going to get a return on it. I believe they've done one pay-per-view. It did under 10,000 buys. So let's say Francis Ngannou triples their viewership, which I think is generous. They do 30,000 buys on their next pay-per-view. You know, if they're charging $50 for it, like, you do the math. Where are they getting the money to pay this guy, I don't know, $5 million to fight? His opponent, $1 or $2 million to fight? And they have to pay everybody else on the card? How are they making their money back here? You know, I'm no math whiz, but if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make dollars, as they say. Then you throw in the fact that he's not even going to fight until mid-2024, and he wants to have a boxing fight before he fights in MMA. This just sounds like an all-around bad investment. Like, I'm happy for Francis. Sounds like he got everything he wanted, and he deserves it. You know, I would never wish for somebody to not get something that they've worked so hard for. But if it were my company, I would not have taken this deal. You know, because who knows who he's going to go out and box also. You know, he can go out and box against a professional boxer and get absolutely smoked. You know, then you're investing all this money in this guy who hasn't fought MMA in, you know, 2 or 3 years by the time he gets back in the cage. His last fight was a loss in boxing. And then who are you putting him in there with? Because if you look at the heavyweight rankings across all promotions, I think something like most of the top 20 is in the UFC besides Francis Ngannou. I'm looking at Tapology here, and this is just happens to be the first one I pulled up. They have Francis Ngannou ranked at 13, which is ridiculous. So automatically kind of ruins the credibility of the site I'm looking at. But if you look at all the fighters, like, yeah, there's a couple of Bellator guys kind of scattered throughout here. Trivia question. Do you guys know who the heavyweight champion of the PFL is? I'll give you a minute. All right, I'll tell you. It's Ante Delija, okay? Good fighter, Croatian dude. Trains with Crow Cop, I believe. 4-fight win streak. Knockout power. Tapology has him ranked as the 29th heavyweight in the world. Now, granted, this may not be the same person that's at the top of the PFL by the time Ngannou is ready to fight in a year and a half or 2 years or whenever it is. But, you know, as of right now, they don't have the name value. Like, how do you justify paying a guy that nobody really knows $1 million or $2 million to get in there with Francis Ngannou, whose value is only going to go down, you know, unless he boxes like a really well-known boxer and demolishes him, you know, then you get a little bit more value to your investment. But I really don't think you're going to see close to a return on it. So business-wise, it makes no sense. Even if the PFL somehow acquires Bellator, I think you have to go down to, gosh, maybe the number 19 ranked heavyweight in the world, according to Tapology, is Ryan Bader, the heavyweight champion. Would you guys buy a pay-per-view to see Francis Ngannou fight Ryan Bader? That's an honest question. Would you pay $50 to watch that fight? Would it depend on, you know, what else is on the card? I think even in a best case scenario, Francis Ngannou goes out, demolishes a pro boxer, PFL acquires Bellator, and you set up Francis Ngannou versus Ryan Bader for the heavyweight championship of the professional Bellator fight league or whatever they're going to call it. I don't think it sells 50,000 pay-per-views. I don't. Am I being too pessimistic here, guys? Let me know. You know, if you listen to the show, you know, I always try to look at the bright side of things, but man, I can't wrap my head around this one. This just does not make any sense to me why they would make this deal. This is like, so, and the letting him go out and box thing is weird too, because are they going to have control over who he boxes? Like, say he does get a fight with Tyson Fury. Is the PFL allowed to say like, we don't want you doing that? Because it's not going to end well for you, and it's going to devalue what we just invested in you. You know, that would be like me saying like, hey, I'm going to sell you this car. Okay. You're going to pay me for it now up front. And then you're going to have to pay me again in a few years. By the way, you can't drive it for a year and a half. And also I'm going to enter it in a demolition derby. But it's like a really good, really sturdy car. And it might win in the demolition derby and look really good. But if it takes some damage, you still got to pay me the full amount when the time comes. You guys aren't taking that deal. You know, I'm pretty sure most of you have bought a car at some point in your lives. If you were presented with that deal, you'd be like, this is absurd. I'm not taking that deal. And that's kind of the position I feel like the PFL is in. But as always, guys, I'm open to criticism on this. I'm open to counter arguments. Like, let me know what you think. Mark Fellows says, what the fuck is the PFL anyway? We don't even have it in Australia. Never watched it. Well, that explains why they did under 10,000 pay-per-views. Yeah, I mean, it's sad because on the one hand, I'm happy that Francis got everything that he was looking for. And on the other hand, you know, it would be nice if there were organizations that could compete with the UFC. It would be better for everybody, you know. And I have a feeling a few heavyweights are going to be looking at this and trying to weasel out of their contracts or fight out their contracts in the UFC to try and get that bid to fight Francis for that $2 million payday. And why wouldn't they? You know, if a guy is in the UFC, like a mid-level heavyweight, is making like $30,000, $35,000 a show, you know, why wouldn't they want that $2 million payday? But then if you look at the heavyweights in the UFC, who has the name value to make it a marketable fight? You know, right now, the only one in the heavyweight division really with name value is John Jones. I guess you could say Cyril Gane. Tom Aspinall has a big following. Sergey Pavlovich is an absolute monster, but I still think flying under the radar with the casual fans. They're not familiar with him yet. There's Stipe, but you know, Stipe's not going to stick around. He's not in it for the money anyway. He's not going to go over to the PFL at 43 years old to fight Francis a third time. I don't see that scenario happening. So, you know, who's it going to be? Who's going to box Francis? How's that going to go? And then how are you putting a heavyweight fight together with him to get a return on this? Anyway, I feel like I've spent too much time on this. So that's that. But I'm curious to hear your opinions. You know, I'm definitely open to the opposing argument. I don't want to be the guy that like UFC is the only thing to watch and that's all you should watch. I'm just trying to think of it from an investment standpoint, but I could be wrong. What do I know? All I know is about whiskey and fighting. That's pretty much it. So in any case, I want to talk about UFC 291. And here I go. I'm going to be negative again. First of all, I love this card. Let me start off with a positive. Every fight on this card that's been announced so far, incredible. So the main event, Dustin Poirier against Justin Gaethje. Rematch, obviously. Poirier knocked out Gaethje the first time they fought, which I would say it was 4 or 5 years ago at this point. Awesome fight. Number two against number three. Great. The reason why they have it at the main event, we'll get into that. Co-main event, Jan Blachowicz welcomes Alex Pereira to the light heavyweight division. I'm really excited for this one because it brings me one step closer to my dream fight, which is Alex Pereira and Jiří Procházka. That's the fight I have been wanting to see since Alex Pereira fought for the title at 185. I wanted to see him move up and fight Jiří Procházka right away. I know that Jamal Hill is the champion. I don't even need this to be for a title. I just need to see that fight. But this is an awesome fight because Pereira has not fought at 205. Obviously, he's got the frame for it. He really struggles to make 185. I think he could probably knock out anybody in the 205-pound division, but what a tough test in Jan Blachowicz to start with, because Blachowicz has a hell of a chin. He keeps his defense super tight on the feet. He's kind of tricky, kind of unorthodox, and he's got grappling. You know, he's a big enough guy that if he gets on top of Pereira, you know, he could hold him down a little bit. How awesome would it be if this is a troll job by Alex Pereira, who's just trying to mess with Israel Adesanya and go out and beat the only other guy who's ever beaten him? You know, I wonder if that's like a motivation for him to take this fight, because I know he wanted to move up to 205, but like, why Jan Blachowicz? And maybe it's because he's the only other guy with a win over Adesanya, and the guy just lives to troll Adesanya, and I kind of love that idea. Tony Ferguson and Bobby Green, this is an awesome fight. Tony Ferguson going through some personal issues right now. Got arrested for DUI, flipped his truck over a few weeks ago. Apparently, he's fine enough to take this fight. Horrible occurrence. You guys know I'm a big advocate of not drinking and driving. You know, the disclaimer at the beginning of the show is not just a joke. I really believe in not driving. If you've had, you know, even a few drinks, even buzz driving is bad. Definitely don't condone that behavior under any circumstances. Tony Ferguson's a guy who's had a rough go of it, you know, not just in the cage, but, you know, in life. He's been through some bad shit, some rough times in the past few years. So, yeah, you know, hopefully it's all behind him. I guess he's well enough physically to take this fight with Bobby Green. You know, if you leave the outside of the cage stuff outside of the cage and just look at it as a fight on paper, it's an awesome fight. You know, obviously Tony Ferguson's chin has been a bit questionable, and in the past few fights and things like that. And when your chin is questionable, the last person you want to be standing across from is Bobby Green. And it's a Bobby Green who's angry because he's coming off the knockout loss to Drew Dober. And, you know, the kind of wacky, bizarre ending in his last fight where he had the headbutt against Jared Gordon and didn't get his win bonus. So you're getting in there with a angry Bobby Green. Apparently we're being raided by MMA Guru right now. Just getting a bunch of comments that say MMA Guru raid. So hello to all of the MMA Guru crowds. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking about UFC 291 here. And the card that was just announced. We also have Paulo Costa and Ikram Alaskarov. That's a fun fight. Steven Thompson and Michelle Padilla. Who wouldn't want to see that? So the reason I started off saying that this was going to be... Oh, we also have Derek Lewis and Marcos Rogério de Lima. Michael Chiesa and Kevin Holland. That's a really fun fight. Oh, I guess the MMA holes are here too. Well, welcome everybody. Thanks for rating the show. I'm getting a barrage of comments here, which is kind of cool. So here's the thing. And since we have a bunch of people on the live show now, here's the thing with this main event. To me, it would be enough to just have this as the main event of a pay-per-view. Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje. It's the rematch. The first fight was incredible. You know, Justin Gaethje was still fighting after he was knocked out. This is enough for me. Apparently, it's not enough for the UFC. They decided to bring back the BMF title, which they're saying is now vacant. And this is just strange to me because here's a title that, while Jorge Masvidal had it, couldn't be defended. He just had it, and that was it. And now it's vacant, and now it's being contested in a different weight class. It's confusing to me. Like, I wouldn't deny that either one of these guys could be considered the baddest motherfucker on the planet, but the idea of the belt is just confusing. And I guess it's to appeal to casual fans who aren't following the sport. So you're not supposed to be trying to connect the dots on this. It's just like a fun thing to get people interested. Like, oh, these two guys are going to fight to see who the baddest motherfucker on the planet is, and then they get a belt. Are they going to be the champion in the UFC? Well, no, they're not, but they get this cool belt. Is that belt going to be defended, or is it just going to sit with one of these guys until they retire, and then two other guys in another weight class are going to fight? Like, what's the lineage? Like, how does this make sense? To me, it doesn't. But again, I guess it's just like a fun marketing gimmick. You know, last time they had The Rock put it on Jorge Masvidal. This time, you know, maybe they'll have Mickey Rourke put it on one of these guys. I don't know. That was just the first celebrity that came to mind. So I don't know what's going to go on with this BMF title, like why it's being reintroduced to the picture here or why they felt like they needed to do that. I would be totally fine with this just being the main event without a belt on the line. I think it's an awesome fight, but again, I'm open to opposing opinions here. So if I'm wrong on this and you guys think otherwise, then let me know. Other than that, and the weird thing is if you look at the way the rankings are set up in the lightweight division, I don't think the winner of this fight would even get a title shot. Let's take a look at the rankings real quick. All right, Islam Makhachev is the champ. Then you got Charles Oliveira. Oliveira is fighting Dariush coming up soon, right? I would think the winner of that is going to get a title shot. So you have Gaethje and Poirier fighting for a BMF title, and then they're not going to fight for the undisputed championship of the weight class. It's just, but then again, I guess the first BMF championship fight was between Nate Diaz and Masvidal, and, you know, they weren't necessarily in immediate contention. I don't know. The whole thing is confusing. Like, the more I talk about it, the more my head hurts. In any case, I can't even keep track with all these comments in the chat, but I guess thanks to Maz for sending over his a-holes to come raid the live show. Maz, of course, from the MMA Holes, which is another podcast that I think we came out around the same time, and they just blew up on YouTube. They're killing it. So, you know, good for them. They make some great content. Very, very much, over the top. They have some great production, like much better than I do. They have all kinds of flashy effects, and they know how to manipulate the screen. I barely know how to like share my screen to show you guys what I'm looking at. So that's that. Okay. Joey says he doesn't hate the BMF title, to be honest. Yeah, I guess there's nothing to really hate about it. You know, I just like for things to make sense. I'm a logical guy. I'm a very literal guy as well. So that's where I kind of get lost with, like, well, what is this title? And then is it going to be defended? What's going to happen? But I guess if you just want to have fun with it, like, it doesn't fucking matter at the end of the day. It's just two bad motherfuckers fighting for a shiny prize. And when you reduce it down to that, then it's just all fun and games. Well, thanks for everybody for jumping on the show. You happen to catch the end of the show. But if anybody's interested in MMA Rocks merchandise, over the top, under the influence t-shirts, tank tops, or hoodies, our friends at Team Reaper makes those. Reaper1.co is the website. You can use the promo code MMARocks10. Save yourself 10%. You can use that promo code for anything on the website as well. They sell rash guards that are really good, training gear. You can also support local fighters. If you buy a t-shirt from a local fighter, puts money in their pocket so they can use it for training, use it for their diet, nutrition, whatever else they need, their training camps, all that stuff. So if you're a supporter of fighters and always thinking that fighters should get paid more, which they should, you can help put some cash in their pockets by buying their merchandise. So go ahead and do that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I don't know when the show will come next week. I'm looking at possibly around Sunday. But if I don't hear from you guys and you don't hear from me, hope everybody has a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend. Just remember what the day is really about. It's about the brave men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice so we can enjoy all the freedoms that we have in this great country of the United States of America. That's all I got for this week. Until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.